This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin. With me this week are two amazing human beings, Kira Shamborsky.
Hey.
And Tia Vasiliou.
Hello.
How have you both been? How have comic books been? I'm curious about all of that stuff. This has been such a crazy afternoon. I want to know how you're doing and what comic books you've been reading. So let's start with Kara.
So I saw Black Panther for the third time last night. And
nice.
Every single time I've seen it, I have a different favorite character. And this time my favorite was M'Baku. And everything he said I found hilarious. And my friend who I saw it with told me after the film that she knew whenever something funny was coming because I started laughing before they said the line. So maybe I shouldn't see repeat films with people who haven't seen them before. And also, I know I've said this before, but it's been a decade of Marvel films. How do people still not know that there are always after credit scenes? Literally the entire theater got up as one and left as soon as the credits started rolling and missed both of the Black Panther ones.
I genuinely ask the same question when I go to those movies because I'm like, you know it's coming. What are you doing, you fools?
I think at this point I have to make a giant poster that says there are post-credit scenes. Marvel movies always have post-credit scenes. Don't leave the theater. Thank you for your attention, which would be like five or six posters in order to make it visible at the back. But like that would be my public service for the week.
See, I imagine you hold it up at the front of the theater WWE style. Like, this is actually happening. There is a post-credit scene.
There is always a Marvel post-credit scene. You peasants, thank you. Like, you non-nerds, how do you not know this? And then, so at the last post-credit scene, no spoilers, I promise, the dude behind me started explaining it to his mom while it was happening. So instead of everyone being able to hear the dialogue, he was just loudly explaining the backstory of what was going on. And I was like, dude, I appreciate you trying to explain to your mom so she knows what's happening, but can't you wait for the 30 seconds it will take for this to be completed and then tell her so she can actually hear it? So frustrating. Right.
Wait till after the scene happens and they go into the actual credits before the second teaser.
Exactly. I was like, why is this happening? Why must we do this? The theater was definitely the most rambunctious theater I've been to in maybe years. Tia, you would have set the place on fire because there were at least four children who were talking the whole time. Five different cell phones went off during the course of the film. Someone started talking on their phone in the alley that you walk into to enter a theater. Like, we could all hear it. You should have just, no. I know you're trying to see the film, but we can all hear you trying to like organize your nephew's birthday. Why does this need to happen right now? Anyway, so I'm glad that I saw the film prior to seeing it at this particular showing because I would have just been so angry and distracted at all of these inconsiderate things happening around me.
People are horrible. They don't deserve nice things like Black Panther.
It was not great.
Very true.
But in terms of comics this week, I actually read a graphic novel from, I think, 2004 called Blankets by Craig Thompson that was published by Top Shelf, I think. And a friend got it for me as a gift a while ago, and I just hadn't gotten around to reading it. But I did, and it looks very intimidating because it's 500 pages. But it only took me about an hour and a half to go through. And it's an autobiographical story about the creator's adolescence and dealing with having been raised in a very religious family and trying to figure out if he wants to do something with that beyond high school. At the same time, exploring a long-distance relationship he's forming with a girl he met at, like, Jesus camp. And how sometimes you can love a person but not want to be with them, or want to be with a person and not love them, and just how those different relationships between them and their respective families played out. It was very well done.
Nice. I that's like one of those books that's on every single list of must reads, you know?
Yeah, with good reason. I got to the end of it and had nothing but nice things to say about it. It's very satisfying and had a good mix of literal and figurative illustration, I thought. There was a lot of what comics can do very well, which is evoke a mood, maybe more so than setting a scene, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So there was a lot of that. Highly recommend. Blankets by Craig Thompson.
Cool. Well, Tia, what about you? How have you been? How have comic books been? All that.
I've been good. So you know how like spin is used to be the trendy like workout thing that people would do, and you like go to like a discotheque but with like workout stationary bikes. Apparently the new thing is erging. So I went to this place on the west side where it's
what
like
is that?
It's like a rowing machine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard it called that before.
Yeah, those are called ergs.
Okay.
So I went last week to one and took a like, you know, it was so, yeah, it was like the music and the like flashing lights. It was literally that scene in Kimmy Schmidt, only the instructor wasn't on the toilet. And I rode until I thought I was going to puke. And then I like got past that. And then I like felt like I was having a transcendent experience because of the endorphins that were like bathing my brain. So it was nice. And then the next day, my back looked like She-Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah, rowing is one of the best workouts you can be doing, but for sure. It takes a lot out of you.
That's my new operation, look like a superhero activity.
Nice. I'm just, you know, I feel like calling it erging just kind of adds a weird picture in my head. I don't know where that comes from.
I don't know. Look, I mean, crew is one of those sports that I feel like rich, white, waspy New Englandy type people do, you know, and they
have
have weird words for things,
some sort of Scandinavian influence or something like that,
and they do it at like dawn, so they're horrible people. Okay.
Opened what I'm saying. A rowing facility in my hometown a couple years ago, and so last summer when I was back with my parents for a while, I thought about maybe doing that for the summer. And the second I looked at the prices, I just kind of slammed my computer shut. Like, how? It's stupidly expensive.
I don't think I would enjoy actual rowing because you have to go outside. But inside of a disco room, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not all that outside.
What comic books have you been reading, though? No, that's okay. I'm super into this conversation, though, because I just have a lot of questions around like what a class even entails and why people do that to themselves. But I'm also curious about what comic books you've read.
So last week on the show, I said I was looking forward to Kid Lobotomy number 6, which I read, and it definitely was amazing. This is by Peter Milligan and Tess Fowler. It's being put out by Black Crown, which I love all of their books. Like they're so punk rock, and I love it. And so this says it's number 6 of 6, and I don't know if it's the end of the series or just the arc. And I mean, the way that it got wrapped up, the type of series, the type of story that it is, it wouldn't surprise me if it's the end, but also I can see how they would continue Kid's journey. And so basically I hope that they do, but you know, I love a good miniseries, and this is such a dense miniseries in terms of like the kind of literary and artistic references that it plays with. And just because Kid is such an unreliable narrator and there's such a surrealist vibe to the story, you could reread these 6 issues for like a year and still get something new out of them every time. So, you know, I could live with it if they don't continue it. But something that really struck me with this number 6 is just how really poetic the writing is. I actually haven't read a ton of Peter Milligan, but I know that he's really good at poignant stuff that just kind of gets you right in the heart. And this is certainly not any different. You read it, and the beautiful way that he puts words together, it just like it they're so good that it hurts. I don't know if other people get like that response when something is just so beautiful and perfect, but I do, and I love it. And you know, I think that Tess Fowler's art is, I had a hard time really describing, I feel like it's slightly more prosaic, but in a way that is really necessary as a compliment to the writing. And it makes the surreal stuff a lot more punchy and a lot more meaningful. Like, there's dream sequences that are very sort of stylized and nonsensical. And so you can't have the whole book be like that. And I think that Tess Fowler is really good at knowing when to draw it straight versus kind of go for broke with the surrealism. And the Kafka symbolism is very heavy in here. Like, there's the cockroach and they talk about Kafka and there's Kafka shows up in his dream and all of this. Of course, the references are mostly pointing at Metamorphosis, which is about a character who wakes up and he's been turned into a giant insect. And he has all of these conflicts with his father and his sister, which are also main components of the story in Kid Lobotomy. And it kind of speaks more broadly about the struggle of the artist in society that doesn't understand them or doesn't care about them. So those parallels are really strong. And if you really wanted to dig into Kid Lobotomy, read Metamorphosis. It's a short story or like a novella or it's not too long. And then go back and read Kid Lobotomy again. I think you'll get a lot out of it. And the other thing that is really strong throughout is this kind of Dada-esque absurdity where like totally nonsensical things are really meaningful. And, you know, Dada came from a sort of disgust over the horrors of World War I and a kind of perceived degradation of society in the modern era. And it speaks to a lot of themes of like subjectivity and mediating really painful realities within our own minds and trying to create buffers, but that we ultimately need to overcome them because they kind of become their own kind of prison. That's really what I got out of the finale of Kid Lobotomy, and it was really beautifully done.
That's awesome. I need to catch up on that series. I read the first two issues. I just haven't sat down and actually done it yet. It's good to hear that it ends really well.
Yeah. You can read the whole 1-6. And I think, it would probably be pretty dense for one sitting. But if you had like an empty afternoon on a weekend, just like sit down and go for it.
That's great. So we'll all have to look forward to the trade if you haven't read the single issues at least.
How about you, Mike?
My week's been kind of all over the place. I've stretched some brain muscles I didn't know that I had. So basically, I didn't want to read or do anything when I came home from work outside of like one day. So I haven't read a lot, but I did. Like, I haven't been on the show, I feel like, in weeks, or at least I wasn't on last week. So this is also some of the stuff I read last week. I sat down and read Haikyuu Volumes 1 and 2, which is a cool volleyball manga. I read Department H number 23 and 24, which are the last two issues of the series. And holy moly, what an ending. I'll just say that. Matt Kent and Charlene Kent, power couple forever. I also read Planetary Volume 4 last night. So never read Planetary before, so I sat down and finally read that. What a mindfuck. But really, the book that I want to talk about is This Guy for Real, which is a book by Box Brown all about Andy Kaufman, who was a comedian in the 70s and 80s who his biggest shtick was he was constantly trying to play a joke on the audience that he was entertaining, and some people took it as a joke, some people took it as offensive. He was kind of an asshole, but he had this whole magic aura about him, and Box Brown does a really good job of breaking things down and saying, you know, Andy Kaufman wasn't a god, he was just a guy that was looking for the ultimate joke, and he never found it before he died. And so the book itself, it functions like a lot of other Box Brown's other books, where it's a documentary about a specific subject. In the case of The Life of a Giant, Andre the Giant, the book that he did all about Andre the Giant, just kind of showing that this man was like this monstrous thing on television and in entertainment, but who he actually was a very depressed alcoholic. And Andy Kaufman, the story here is, you know, he was this guy, like I said, who just was always trying to imitate the idols that he had and try to go a step further and say, like, how offensive can I be before people really start to truly hate me? And by the end of his life, people did truly hate him for some of the stuff that he did. And it's a really interesting thing. I had like a fascination when I was in like early college, late high school with Andy Kaufman, because I saw that Man in the Moon movie that they made starring Jim Carrey. And that movie portrays him as this wunderkind, like, genius dude who swindled the entire world, and he realized that everything was a fake idea. It has this whole magic feel to it. And so by the end of the movie, they're like, is Andy Kaufman dead? ? The long and short of it is, yes, he's dead. But the movie makes it seem like maybe that was just his biggest joke. No, that's not the case. I think the Box Brown story here does a good job of settling any kind of confusion you may have had from the movie and anything that you read. There's been a couple books about the character, or about Andy Kaufman. He's not a character, he's a person. And the what was the most interesting part is that a lot of the actual facts came from interviews with friends and family of Andy Kaufman, which is something that I didn't think that they were into. Like, the Kaufman family were not into doing interviews or talking about Andy or anything, because there was this immense sadness that came with the sudden end of his life, as well as like almost an embarrassment for what he had been in some ways. And as I think when Man in the Moon came out, there was, I remember reading online that they didn't want to talk to anybody, they didn't want to give interviews. And so, but at least by this movie, or by the time this book came out, I guess that's changed. I don't know. Or Box Brown is just a nicer guy to talk to because he's just kind of a lovable dude. That could also be it. But I liked the whole book was very good. And honestly, like, he has sources and articles and all this stuff at the back of the book, which I didn't expect because I don't think he had that in some of his other stuff. So if you're looking for a really cool biographical comic book, like, this one kicks ass. I don't know if it's better than the Tetris book that Box Brown did, but this one is very, very good. It was worth every penny that I paid for it. So if you're into that stuff, I highly recommend it. So, you know, that's me. But let's talk about comic books that are coming out this upcoming week. Comic books are released on April 4th, 2018. Tia, what are you excited for this week?
Well, you know, The Wicked and the Divine number 35 is coming out. So,
obviously. Oh, okay, cool. Kara, what are you excited for this week? kidding.
No, this arc is crazy. We're finally starting to actually get some answers to the questions that we've had for 3 freaking years.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost kind of blowing my mind, and I actually find myself kind of reluctant to know. Like, I almost don't want to know.
Right, the air of mystery was half of the characters, right?
Sort of, yeah. Now I'm like, oh. You know, and I've never really been in the very first arc, I was kind of, I don't know, getting involved in fan theory chit chat on the internet and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. It didn't take long for me to really pull back from that and just kind of be like, you know, I don't think that the most interesting thing about this story is like the literal plot of it. Like, I think that a lot of the art, like the more meta conversation is what's more interesting to me. So I'm not going to try really hard to figure out like who did it or why this character did this thing. I'm kind of more interested in asking like questions about the artistic choices and the setup of the story and that sort of, you know, how things are done with color and art and things like that. So for mm-hmm. me, like getting all of these answers thrown at me now, I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, yeah. Oh,
I guess I was interested in that, but like, could you just keep going with this story? Because like the circumstance is what actually makes the story interesting, how characters react to this dramatic thing, right? Or the series of dramatic things.
Well, no, not so much that as just like I had kind of put to the side and in my mind that any of these things happen. You know what I mean? Like I would read them and I'd be like, okay, yes, this happened. But then I would obsess over them the way that a lot of fans do. And I'm not saying it's sure. in a bad way. Because like, you know, sometimes you read fan theories and they're fascinating and they've just combed through every little tiny detail of the plot. And I'm like, damn, you know, that's dedication. I admire that. You know, so I'm not saying it like as a bad thing. It just, I don't know. I felt like though I was getting more out of it looking at other things. And now that all of these mysteries are kind of being wrapped up, it's sort of like very emotional in a way because it means it's going to end soon.
Yeah. They plan this to be something around 40 issues, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, seeing that big old number 35 is very scary then.
I think they're saying that there's another year.
Okay.
The first couple arcs of The Wicked and the Divine, I liked the mystery aspect of it and the not knowing because the characters are gods and it just made me think about existing belief systems and deities in general, and how it's all hearsay. It's all interpretations from mortals about who these gods are and what they're doing. So mm-hmm. the mystery of the wicked and the divine, I just kind of accepted it, because gods are supposed to be unknowable, and the things that we do know or believe about them are written and rewritten and transferred by humans who are putting their own spin on it and are fallible. So exploring the world of the wicked and the divine is for me more about just the characters being interesting and the art being stunning and the overarching look at what it means to have a belief system, even if it's non-conventional.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally right. I think that ineffability is a crucial component of faith. And if you are a follower of the comic, so to speak, it's hard to have the curtain drawn back. Like, I'm kind of reluctant.
Is this going to be one of those books that Kieran and Jamie get drawn into because of this idea of, oh, you follow the comic? It's like a religion.
You know what? I don't know, but I always mean to ask Kieran, and I always forget when I'm talking to him, but there's a scene in Journey in a Mystery when they go to a pub to talk to Mephisto, and there's someone drawn in the pub that looks a little bit like Kieran, and I've always wondered if he had himself drawn into it.
Or maybe that was a joke by the artist.
I know, right? Because I think didn't they do that in Thor recently? Didn't they draw themselves into a pub scene? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't read that book regularly.
I know. I don't either. I need to catch up.
I have all the trades, but I haven't actually caught up.
We're good at reading things.
Good. We're great comic book readers. Kara, what are you excited for this upcoming week?
Betty and Veronica Vixens number 5. So the Vixens series from Archie Comics is basically an alternate universe where Betty and Veronica are in a biker gang. And I realize this is a trendy twist or trendy theme in comics right now, but I don't really care because it's Betty and Veronica. And as I keep saying, the Archie Comics characters work in whatever situation you drop them into as long as they retain their character. So, You put Betty and Veronica in a biker gang, I am going to want to read it.
I mean, biker gangs are pretty cool, even if they are kind of overly prevalent in media.
Yeah, yeah.
You could do worse.
This is true.
Yeah. Well, for me this week, I'm really excited for a new book called Isola. That's Isola number 1. This is by Brendan Fletcher, Carl Kershaw Misasik is a colorist, and Aditya Bidikar is a letterer. The synopsis is, the captain of the Royal Guard has fled the capital city with the Queen of Mar, suffering under the effects of an evil spell. Captain Rook's only hope of returning Queen Olwyn to her throne and saving the kingdom from impending war lies on an island half a world away, a place known in myth as Isola, Land of the Dead. I don't know what this book is at all. I saw the cover of it. I saw some interior previews, I believe, and I added it to my pull list, I think, when it was announced a couple months ago, and I'm super excited because I'm a sucker for fantasy books. So I'm all in. That's all that I know. And Brendan Fletcher's pretty good writer, as far as I'm concerned.
Basically, it's if you like Miyazaki, you will like this book.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah. I think this is going to just be a cool fantasy book, and I'm willing to try it. So jumping on board is something that I have almost no information about outside of the synopsis and the pretty covers. So that's pretty much me.
What more do you need?
Yeah.
We will judge books by their covers here.
That's right.
Sometimes, you know, we will. And if you're trying something new, sometimes you just need to say, you know what? That looks cool. I maybe recognize one or two of those names. Let's just try it.
Except, you know what is the worst? When they get a different artist for covers than interiors, and then you're like disappointed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. See, but this is
we've
why
been
I do,
burned before.
Yeah, I do a lot of googling around this stuff. Carl Kershaw's art is pretty good.
No, it's beautiful. It fits the story perfectly.
Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to try this, you know. And if I don't like it, maybe I'll wait for the trade. try the trade, but I'll at least dive into number one, because why not? My pull list isn't large enough, I guess.
Is it in triple digits yet?
No, I've never. Hopefully never. Mm-hmm. Maybe never.
Maybe never. So last week, Kara, Kate, and I talked about our feminist agenda, and we kept using the word porny in kind of a negative way to describe comics that we felt like were a bit of an affront to our sensibilities from a feminist perspective. And thinking about that, I realized, you know, porny doesn't have to be inherently negative, and I think it would be useful for us to unpack a little bit what we meant by that as a negative, and then maybe pivot and talk a little bit about adult or erotic comics, porn comics, and some of the titles that get it right, and what are the hallmarks of good adult comics. So Kara and Mike and I are going to try to dig into that a little bit.
Mike is going to try very hard not to giggle.
Yeah, I am, for some reason, almost 30-year-old man who still feels like giggly and weird about talking about sexy things with people who I'm just friends with. Because that's, to me, that's like it's a very intimate, like, personal, you know, thing with another person. But I mean, there's nothing that says you can't have an honest adult conversation about it. So I'm going to try my hardest.
I'm pretty sure that my mom and Kara's parents both listen to the show on the regular, so...
So...
Hi, Mom. So, hi, Dad.
Warning.
Hi, Mom.
I'm over 18.
Sure,
this is fine.
Listens too. Yeah. So I guess maybe before we get into it, we're going to be talking about some explicit-ish things. So just a heads up for anyone out there. But I guess the thing that when we first started talking about what this topic would be, the first thing that came to mind for me was Sunstone by Stepan Sajic. Because to me, that book feels very sexy and beautiful. And I really love his art. But on the whole, it doesn't feel like it's like pornographic, you know. It doesn't feel like someone's reading it in order to, you know, gain some kind of sexual pleasure out of it. It's like it's using the like sexual nature of the characters in order to tell a very compelling story about relationships. And I think reading that book kind of opened my eyes to, oh, just because there are, you know, beautiful men and women in a comic book and they, you know, have abs of steel or they're, you know, voluptuous shaped women or whatever and they're attractive, that doesn't mean that this is something that someone's kind of like getting off on. And I'm looking for more of that. So I don't know if you guys have suggestions as well, but I kind of matured a little bit in reading that book, I guess.
Well, you know, I think that it is easy to say that if something is erotic, but it also has a story, then it's somehow more elevated than something that is explicitly made with the intent to arouse. Mm-hmm. And I want to maybe challenge that idea a little bit, because there's nothing really wrong with arousal and fantasy and you know what I mean? Like, for me, the difference between the good and bad here is that you have to acknowledge that if something is a fantasy or intended for arousal or pleasure, I really like to see the subjectivity of the creator in the work. Like, if there's not a story to quote unquote justify it, some sort of hand of the author for me helps to make it feel like it isn't being derogatory or exploitative in any way. Whereas I think that there is some pornographic media that the way that the characters are portrayed, it's almost like they're being objectified to the point of making them like the butt of a joke. It's like, for me, this is often content that is like super rapey. And it just makes me feel like the humanity of those characters is just a joke to the people who make and read those books. And I realize those people may have no interest in participating in conversations about this, but, you know, I think that it's worth thinking about the parameters of that conversation and how we can elevate a useful discourse and really highlight the voices of creators who are thinking about how they can portray sexuality and fantasy and allow everyone to just have a good time without feeling like it's kind of taking their humanity or their dignity. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, like you're looking for author intent. Like you're trying, you want to be able to see the author's intent, even if it's not necessarily like story-driven kind of.
I wouldn't even say intent so much as their subjectivity. Like, this is my fantasy, and it's about me. Whereas where it centers the author instead of what is being done to this character.
Gotcha. You know,
And because intent doesn't matter. I don't care what the author's intent is. You could make a really disturbing porn comic, and maybe your intent is just to, I don't know, get off because that's your thing. But maybe it makes me feel like shit, and I'm going to call you out on how gross it makes me feel. Like, it wasn't your intention, but that was still the result. I'm sure it's hard to step back from that, where people are receiving your work in a way you didn't intend. But I think that when you're dealing with something as delicate as this, as sexuality and identity and all of that, you kind of just have to maybe accept that people are not wrong in the way they're responding to your work. Mm-hmm. And if you genuinely did not mean any harm, then like, don't be a douche about it if it does cause harm.
That feels like a very, 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 very fine line to ride.
I know. I don't know where
most
it
of
is.
This is a fine line.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that, yeah, that was kind of what I was trying to get to. I guess it's a fine line, but like, it is there, and it is something like, as a creator in this type of medium and of that, using that type of story or creating these types of comics, you know, like it is something you should be aware of, right?
Like, if you're an artist, you can't control how your art is going to be viewed or interpreted. So it's almost like once you create a piece of art, your opinion about it is only so relevant, because everyone's going to have their own interpretation of what it means to them and how it makes them feel.
Basically, right. Yeah. People's sexual preferences and pleasures and fantasies don't necessarily mean that their political views are any less valid. Like, we had a hangout with a listener who was like a little uncomfortable with being attracted to or like thinking that certain characters were sexy. And, you know, we sort of talked about, well, you know, the creator made those characters kind of to be a little sexy. That's not the only thing about them. They're like full characters, and being sexy is just part of it. And, you know, the characters were made by a woman who is like kind of speaking for her own identity, and so like going back to what I said before, like she's putting her own subjectivity into it, and so it's not really objectifying anyone to pick up on that, because she's putting it into the character.
Right. I mean, the book we were talking about was Motor Crush, I believe, right?
Yeah. Lola and Domino, there are some sexy characters. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, yeah, there's nothing. You can't deny that Babs Tarr went, you know, into those characters thinking, like, not only are they fantastic characters, but they look very good while they're being badasses. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think that's pretty much what we had that conversation about, was that it's okay to think that, but there's more to them than that. And it's very apparent in the story.
But you know what? There's other adult books that are explicitly, like, porny books. And, you know, I think that we in the episode last week kept calling things porny because the porniness was being inserted into context that it wasn't adding anything constructive to the character or to the reader or to the story. You know, like, I don't need to pick up a mainstream 12, you know, PG-13 Black Widow or Wonder Woman comic and see her drawn like you traced a porn like shot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or somebody retweeted a drawing of Wonder Woman where it was like an upskirt shot and her entire ass cheek was showing. Like,
yeah,
that's not useful or constructive. But you know what? Tarot Witch of the Black Rose is an adult comic made by Jim Ballant and Holly Golightly for Broadsword Comics. And there's a lot of TNA in this book. This book is like all TNA and like sex scenes and like weird magical creatures, erotica.
I was very worried you were going to say magical penises, and I was like, uh-oh.
Well, there are those, yes.
Okay.
And also magical tentacles and all sorts of magical vaginas and, you know.
Sure.
But like, when you read it, you would definitely describe it as porny, but like not in a bad, I mean, not in a derogatory way. You know what I mean? Because that's the point.
Porny is like a word that has, there's a little bit, it's kind of a word that's been used to describe things derogatorily, but maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be. I think like the connotation of like, oh, that's really porny is like you grab all the negative aspects of, you know, pornographic materials about, you know, the mistreatment of women and men and things like that, but maybe like there is porn that is, that can be, you know, and is okay, and it's like, this is someone's job, this is something they're doing, and it is okay to observe it. Like, it's there for you to observe. It's okay to observe that.
Like, you get the sense when you read tarot that the creators just want everyone to have a good time, and I think for me, like, that makes it a big difference.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because there was a book that we had talked about reading before this, and so I figured I'd spend some time and actually check it out, because I'd never heard of it before, Ménage à Trois.
Oh, yeah, which
is Ménage à Trois.
Ménage à Trois.
Well, it says Ménage à Trois, but the number has the number three in it. I don't know.
That's Trois. Trois means three. Trois is French for three.
Okay. Gisele Lagos is Canadian. I'm pretty, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, it's a Canadian like webcomic that was collected in print and digital editions and stuff. So you can go to the website and you can read the whole thing or majority of it or something. I read the first probably 50 or 60 strips. And what was interesting about it is that thing that you just mentioned, Tia. Like, the whole book is very sexual, and it's kind of like got some, you know, weird anime influence or whatever in a couple of different ways, where, you know, woman, you know, her top falls off or whatever, and one of the main characters, his nose starts bleeding, you know, classic stupid anime manga tropes. But on the whole, the book feels like everyone's just trying to have a good time. It's very like highly sexual, and it's very, the book itself is focused around like sexual things with these three roommates that live in this apartment. But it never feels like abusive to anybody. It never, like, it's all about all of the characters having a good time and being happy together in their own ways, in their own, you know, sexual preferences, in the way, the things that they like, things they don't like. And it's very sex positive, which I liked a lot about the book. And no character is left out or taken advantage of, which I like a lot. It's in like, because it's in a comedic way, it's very well done.
I don't think that's to say that adult comics have to be comedic and positive in their story and in their like tone in order to be good.
Sure.
I've read some pretty dark adult, but mostly in the manga genre, where like one of my favorite ones, it's called S&M by Mio Morale, and it's basically about this woman who's like, whose mother dies, or like, basically this woman's life was inadvertently destroyed by this guy. So it's a revenge story where she's like trying to not only ruin this man's life, but also like ruin the lives of everyone that he loves. She's like,
oh, geez.
It's really dark and twisted.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of extremely graphic sex in this book, because one of the ways that she is trying to get revenge on him is to like get his wife to cheat on him with this tutor who's really like a prostitute that she hired to seduce the mom. And then they have all this super, like, the book is called S&M for reasons. Let's just, you know, and then she like kidnaps the guy and keeps him in a cage. Oh God, my favorite scene is where he's like, he realizes that she falls asleep after she has an orgasm. And so he's like, I have to give her an orgasm and then she'll fall asleep and then I can escape. But then he realizes like, oh no, I have no idea how to give a woman an orgasm. And you're just like, doh.
Oh, that old chestnut.
So, you know, I mean, I guess there are elements of humor in it, but you know, it it's very, very abusive in a lot of ways, but you still don't get the sense that it's being done lightly or that the humanity of the characters is the butt of a joke, or that the sex scenes are happening, you know, at the expense of the reader's humanity, which I really get from like, you know, Avatar Boundless books, for example. I just feel like, yeah, okay, these are not for me, and you've made that very clear, but they are about my body.
Yeah, that's and you know, it's funny that you say that, because even in describing that book, I feel like there is character depth and there is a human inside of all of these characters, or that these characters are human in some way, right? Like you see that there is like repercussion and there is emotional like destruction that's happening, and you know, of all these things that this person is apparently doing. Whereas in Avatar books, it just feels like bodies, like numbers and pictures, and then there's nothing real about anybody. They're just a thing that where all this bad shit happens to them, and you're just witnessing it, like you're watching a car crash, you know, and you take out you're just completely objective that there are people involved. You just see a car hit another car, and you're like, oh, that looks bad, and you move on. But you realize there's people involved, like a person inside of a car just hit another car that contained another human. And like, if you don't think about that, like, or when you do think about that, it can like really screw you up, because it's, you just like wiped off their existence and saying, oh, look at that car crash, and moved on. If that makes any sense, what I'm trying to say there.
It totally does. And that's why I really like it when the artist's subjectivity really comes through in the work, because then their humanity is also part of it too.
Mm-hmm. Man, I need to read more of this stuff. I feel like I need to like deep dive into like some good mature content.
Yeah, yeah.
All like, I do is read teenagers' books.
Some of the it's interesting that Tia, you were talking about the book S&M for being a darker version of this that still works and leaves you not feeling gross, because we were talking about how difficult it is to figure out where the line is for something being just like arousing but comfortable, as opposed to making you feel gross. Like the French publisher Musardine does a lot of erotic comics, but the majority of them make me feel gross and uncomfortable because they feature a severe power dynamic imbalance between the participants. And it's very clear that those books are drawn and written about just like men having power over young girls in a really rapey, uncomfortable way. And so those are being made to arouse a certain type of audience. And it makes me uncomfortable even knowing that these things are being made specifically to target people who get off on that kind of fantasy. And so that's something that makes me feel uncomfortable.
I think those books would have less power if we were more able to talk about like why that's a problem in real life and take real life action to like protect people who are exploited in those ways. And so it's hard because on one hand, you know, there's this idea that like people get off on certain things. That doesn't, you know, necessarily mean that they believe those things should also happen in real life. And especially in comics, it's like no actor is being asked to even like act this scene out. It's literally just drawings. So like really, who is it hurting? But I think that the problem comes up when you talk about the real life scenarios that this comes from. And I feel like people shut down conversations and say, oh, you know, free speech or blah, blah, whatever. And it's like, in order for these books to actually like be more free to do their freak thing, we need to be able to criticize them and talk about what the problems are in real life that they reflect.
Mm-hmm. I mean, creating something like that, even if it doesn't, it isn't harming any actual physical person, doesn't mean that it's not informing others about things that could be used to harm others. You know what I mean? And this is all types of violent comics. You know, like where you read about these intricate murder stories or something like that. It's something that just influence someone in a very negative way.
Yeah, like Garth Ennis's Punisher is sort of gratuitous in the same way, where it's like, yes, it's a story and you know, all of that, but we have to be able to talk about the real world implication of this scenario in order for the book to have freedom to exist as a piece of art that's like reflecting our culture. You can't shut down conversations about it. And I think that's kind of where the problem for me comes in more. Like, I'm not even so much mad that these things exist. Like, for some people, that's the kind of story or the kind of fantasy they want to read about. And that's fine. But we also have to be able to, like, critique them in other contexts.
Right.
So, Mike, Go ahead. I think you were looking for some more recommendations of things where we're approving them.
Yeah, so. I mean, I generally don't necessarily always seek this kind of stuff out. You know, I'm very conservative in that fashion. Like, this isn't the kind of stuff I necessarily want to read about because that's not my fantasy. Like, I don't want to read, you know, that's not the type of escape that I want when I'm reading comic books. But that doesn't mean that I'm opposed to it. So it's never something where I am actively searching about it. But I'm not going to turn down a good story that involves these types of themes because a good story is something that I want to read. And, you know, this type of stuff is something I don't have a lot of expertise in general, just because I haven't read a lot about it. So, I mean, I'll definitely take any recommendations I can get to enlighten myself, because that's half of it, is just enlightening yourself to say, like, well, here is a good example of the type of stuff we're talking about compared to my go-to thought about what these types of comics are in my head probably before talking to the two of you about it was this nasty Avatar stuff that you see, and, you know, this very explicit, like, very bizarre manga and anime that you see or that I've seen on the internet before. So,
well, I think
gladly.
I think it's worth pointing out, particularly with Yaoi or Boy Love manga, that it's a way for woman creators, Japanese creators mainly, to explore certain taboo aspects of their own sexualities with you know, two male characters. And there are a lot of tropes in those books that are really alarming around consent and things like that, that are really not, like, it sounds like such a cop-out to say this, but they're really not meant to be taken literally if you put them in the context of, you know, that for women it's very taboo to enjoy sex or to be sexual or, you know, to think about these very extreme sexual scenarios. And so they almost are like using these stories as avatars to just explore their own sexuality. And you know, you can't always put a disclaimer on a book like that, but that I would say, like, there is weird manga stuff where it's just like, you know, the ages of the characters or the consent is pretty dubious, but a lot of times there's a cultural reason for that isn't like what it seems. And then I would also say, like, for Western comics, Iron Circus Comics puts out very, very good adult content that is not Avatar Boundless porn, and that isn't the sort of more, I don't know how I would describe, it isn't like the yaoi stuff that you kind of maybe would be uncomfortable with lacking context like that.
Gotcha.
So you recently reminded me, Tia, of the webcomic Starfighter. Which,
that was a recommendation to me from Brandon Graham.
Yeah, so I'm like halfway through it, and almost immediately it reminded me of a lot of the yaoi tropes that you kind of touched on, like the meet cute between the two protagonists is they're sharing a room together, and the second they enter the room, the more aggressive one pins the, like, weaker one against the wall and bites his mouth to leave a scar and mark him up so that none of the other characters will, like, bother him.
What? And so, wait, right. What? So, what?
So, but, and so I was like, oh, okay, I guess this is just porn without plot. But then as the story progresses, you see there's a lot more nuance between the interpersonal relationships between the characters. So it wasn't just a generic trope fest, and there's a lot of nuance going on, and it's an erotic comic, but there's enough other stuff happening where it's not just the erotic aspects of it.
You know what, though? I think that... So I think about the fan fiction that I've read and written, let's be honest, in the...
Sure.
You know? And I think that there's something that, like, all of those tropes are great. Like, you love these tropes when you're reading them in prose, and then you see them drawn out, and it's just like, whoa. And so sometimes I have to sort of step back and be like, you know, sometimes desire is like, extreme and weird, and that's okay. And the place to actually like indulge and explore that is in like arts and media. And maybe like you don't bite someone in real life, but you like can, there are safe parameters that you can set up to explore those fantasies. And I think that fiction is a great way to set those parameters. You know what I mean?
Hmm. So, I didn't even like, consider fan fiction.
Well, okay, so Tia mentioned some of the Iron Circus stuff, and a lot of those works from that publisher are anthologies where it's just a series of different erotic stories from different creative teams, different creators, and it's more or less all escapism and stuff that just, for various reasons, would not happen. Like, one of the stories in one of the anthologies is a few pages where it's basically a tentacly computer getting off a girl who is in some kind of relationship with it. And just really stretching your mind past what is physically possible. And it does feel very fan fiction-y, because a lot of the things that pop up in these anthologies are things that you do see in the realms of erotic fan fiction, because fanfic writers are extremely creative.
Oh, yes.
Right. And again, like, the visual representation of it is maybe like makes you confront more what your fantasy is or what you think your fantasy is. And you get to think about it in a different way. But again, the tone of these anthologies is not like it doesn't feel gross, or at least like for me it doesn't feel gross reading them. It's just saying, oh, this is what this is made for. I am an audience for some of these things. Some of these things are maybe not my bag, but it's all about exploring in a safe right. way, like Tia said.
They also do some graphic novel, adult graphic novels. Letters for Lucardo is really beautiful. It's, I'm going to say this artist's name wrong, and I'm really, really sorry. Noura Haikila, I think. We need to add her to our database.
Our pronunciation guide.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a historical romance LGBTQ vampire thing. I mean... sold.
Okay.
You know,
I was gonna right? say I have a list of about 10 people right now who I'm immediately gonna go recommend this to.
Yeah. It's about an older gentleman who works at the royal palace and as a scribe, and so then he has this client, this aristocratic client, who it turns out they develop feelings for each other, and the aristocratic client is like a vampire or something, and there's the sex scenes are very explicit. It's a sexy adult book, but it hits a lot of character identities that you maybe don't always get to see, like, especially in vampire fiction. It's like, give me a break. Like, some, you know, 100-year-old is really gonna want to hang out with a teenager. No one wants to hang out with teenagers. But like, you know,
you know, he's hanging out with a teenager for one reason.
Yeah.
You know?
But like, ew. So I actually really love that the mortal in this love story is an older man, because it's just like, I don't know, it's touching and beautiful and sexy.
Well, you'd think, you know, that's the thing, you know, vampires or, you know, immortal beings like that, you'd think that they would eventually pretty much explore the entire spectrum of sexuality, because it's like, it's going to get dull if you're just kind of like focusing on one type of person your whole life.
Yeah, probably.
Your whole immortal goddamn life. Yeah.
Oh man, it would be super creepy. I want to write a vampire story where the vampire just like seeks out people who are exactly the same for like for hundreds of years. That would be creepy.
Oh man. See, now I feel weird
that
about
is creepy.
That. Like he's got a type and it's very specific. It's like, yeah. Oh god.
Anyway, well, that's
yeah,
a
this
off
I mean
topic.
This has been incredibly enlightening, I'll say that so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And something that I think Tia mentioned earlier about, I don't think erotic comics become more or less valid if there's a plot or not.
Sure,
like,
sure.
And so a really good example of an erotic comic that's like good and sex positive and has virtually no plot is Chester 5000 XYV by Jess Fink.
Okay.
And the premise is there is a woman married to an inventor, and this is kind of like a Victorian steampunky thing, but drawn in a really fluid animated style. And so it's not too detail oriented. And the inventor is so busy working on his stuff that he doesn't want to take the time to like satisfy his wife's sexual appetites. So he builds her a robot to have sex with her instead so that he can go back to inventing.
Oh,
and
sure.
So the whole story, as one does. So the story from there is just basically like watching this woman and this robot have sex, and then the inventor getting jealous of his creation, and then he goes off and has sex with somebody else, and then there's a spin-off story where she goes off and has sex with somebody else. And so it's basically all porn without plot, but the underlying theme is just
no plot.
There's no
there's
plot.
No, that's
plot.
Like, yeah, that sounds pretty plot driven.
It's not very plot driven because most of it is sex scenes and various incorporations of the different people all having sex with one another. But it's all about the, like, sure, the main focus is the sex, but it's really all about the connections. And there's virtually no dialogue in the entire story. So it's all about these nonverbal communications and connections. And you can really see how these characters are feeling. And it's not just about their arousal. It's about their emotions as well. And that's what I think makes it a good example of what erotic comics can be in a positive way.
Yeah. Another aspect I think of being a positive / responsible consumer of adult content is like, you don't get to shame people for their sexuality or sex work and also consume media that like is sexy. Like you don't get to participate in the capitalizing on their sexuality if you don't also support them as human beings, like you know, supporting sex workers' rights and supporting like victims of sex trafficking without sex shaming consensual sex work, and like you know, not slut shaming women and not taking advantage of people's sexualities. You know what I mean? So like, I think that I am less concerned about people enjoying sex in art and media, and I'm more concerned with the way that people compartmentalize their sexuality in a way that makes them like replicate power dynamics or behaviors that are really harmful in real life surrounding people's sexuality. And then, you know what I mean? Like, it be a good person in real life, and it's less of a problem to have these maybe super extreme adult books floating around in your library. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see. I totally get what you're saying. It's you should be, if you're going to enjoy this type of content, it's you also have to understand that there are real people that are
exactly
similar to those characters, and that you should support them as well. I totally get that. This has all been very enlightening, like I said.
I was gonna say, Mike, I feel like you've learned so much here today.
I honestly, I hope listeners out there are getting the same feeling that I am. Like, this makes me feel less weird about those types of books, or I guess not weird, but uncomfortable. And I think that's the goal here. We're fixing comics week
Mike
after
drop.
Week here.
Over one episode at a time.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, unless the final thoughts on, I guess, erotic comics and these types of adult mature content books, because otherwise we can wrap up and maybe we'll do a follow-up episode, ?
Let's,
with a special guest, ?
Well, let's see what happens.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess, you know, you can follow everyone on the internet. You can find us all on Twitter. You can find Tia at Portrait of Madam X on Twitter. You can find Kara at Karazam on Twitter, as well as on Medium as Kara Dotchzam, where she writes about Archie every week, which is fantastic.
Riverdale.
You can find me on Twitter at Mike Rappin. You can follow the show at IRCB Podcast. We post all sorts of things throughout all hours of the night, and we post polls almost every Friday. This week's poll was, how does Alfred take his tea?
And nope, no sugar.
Hey, you know,
with
go
gin.
Vote. Please go vote. highly encourage that.
We have a Goodreads group with weekly threads. This week's thread was top three favorite comic covers. You can find us at our website, ircbpodcast.com.
Please rate the show, subscribe, tell your friends. You can email the show. We're at ircb@destroythesybe.org.
One thing that's really cool about ratings is that we're currently 5 stars on iTunes. And we want to keep it that way. So go vote and rate, all that stuff. Infinity Shred does all the music for this show. They're the absolute best band in the universe. Xander's a wizard, super cool guy, super buff guy, and he's fantastic. I want to say thank you to everyone. Thank you to Tia and Kara for being on the show. And until next time, beware, for Galactus is coming.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is the I Read Comic Books Podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin. That's not my name. Can't even say my own fucking name.
Maybe it's us, Tia.
Xander,
maybe we're the problem.
Save that as B-roll.
I'm so mad at myself right now.
Xander is going to kill us.
I know.
He is going to kill us.
Just take a breath,
right,
Mike. You got this.
Let's do this. Let's do this for real.